Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
All right, that's better. All right, we'll start again. So as you can hear, we've got a guest again. It's Scott Byers. He's a UK professional MMA fighter. And as Tapology just told me, that it says you've only got one pro win on there. I'm not sure how much they update it, but as you said, you've got two. So.
No, that's first. I've got my next fight coming up April 28th.
Ah. Yeah.
So 4 weeks out.
Good stuff. Yeah, so you had I've seen on there you've had quite a lot of amateur fights.
Yeah, I think I had 13 amateur fights in total. Spaced over the past 4.5-5 years. Few injuries within that. I was hoping to go pro last November, but I had a pretty big injury last year. I wrecked my left knee, ruptured my PCL, LCL, and posterolateral corner. So I had to have reconstructive surgery on that. Just as I was coming back from that, I started boxing a bit, trying to work on things. Ended up breaking my nose, got a septal hematoma, and had a pocket of fluid at the top of my nose and was advised to stop fighting because it could travel up to my brain. Long story short, 12 weeks later, I went back to the hospital. Turned out that the fluid had gone hard, much like cauliflower ears. So not only have I got cauliflower ears, I've also basically got cauliflower nose. but the good thing was it then couldn't move. So my first, am I good to fight again? To which they said there shouldn't be a problem. So I put in a 12-week camp, had one more amateur fight. Won that against a guy who was 6-1, just fought for a title, narrowly lost out on that. So I put in a good performance against that, 3-round domination, won that. That was on Almighty Fighting Championships up in Leeds. Spoke to them about signing for them as my management company. They were more than happy. And within 2 months, they'd got me my pro debut in Norwich on Contenders. Managed to win that first round TKO, and been training since that, and I'm now returning to Contenders April 28th to put in another dominant performance.
Good stuff. So yeah, so you said 13 amateur fights. I actually know three of the guys you fought.
Oh really?
Yeah, they're from because I'm from Corby, you see. Yes.
Yeah, oh, so, yeah.
I know, Den, Ross, and Ryan.
Yeah.
I trained with Den and Ross, and Ryan's just a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I get on really well with Ryan now.
Yeah, he's... I consider them all good fighters.
Yeah, definitely. Den was actually my first fight.
I did
fight.
Notice that as well.
And it wasn't until the night that I sort of found out that he had a lot of Thai boxing experience. Yeah, so then it was a case of, I don't want to be standing up with this guy because he is a beast.
Yeah, and he's...
And since that fight, we just get on really well. And he does a lot for the kids around Corby. And I just think he's a legend, really, to be honest.
He's a top bloke. And he's super strong on the ground as well.
Definitely. Yeah, he is.
It's really surprising for how small he is.
Yeah, he's like a two-weight champion as well, isn't he, in MMA? Battle Arena and things like that. Yeah.
See, I'm 6'2", when I was training with him, I was just under 13 stone. So yeah, I was just under 90 kilos, and I was struggling.
Yeah, he's mad strong. Unthinkable, really.
But yeah, going back to yourself, obviously you had 13 amateur fights. What would you say the best thing is about amateurs? Do you really count the amateur records? Obviously, yours is a mixture of wins and losses. I've been working on the BCMMA guys for the 8-man tournament that they've got coming up next Saturday, actually. That's all amateurs, all in one night. And a lot of them have been saying that mainly it's just to gain experience. Like, you could have 25 fights and only win one of them, but then be ready to turn pro straight after you've had your 25th one because
yeah, 100%.
Because you've got so much experience and you've learned so much in them 25 fights. Obviously, whilst you're doing them, your results and stuff, they still affect you. Obviously, they affect your confidence and everything like that. And then when you turn pro, people look at your amateur record. So do you think it is basically mainly just for experience?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you're not get the feel for it without being in the cage. No matter how much training you do, nothing replicates being in that cage and being alone on your own. To me, I was fighting as often as I could. I think 1 year I had 9 fights in 1 year. I think I ended up doing 3 weekends in a row, just to get the experience. I was training with good guys and we all used to push each other and we'd all try and fight on the same cards as often as we can, which is where I get to know a lot of the now other top amateurs or really up and coming pros, just from all being on the same circuit and all helping each other really.
Yeah. See, another thing I was going to say is, do you think it's good to fight locally sort of thing, or as close to local as you can? Obviously, because when you're amateur, majority of fighters have got full-time jobs and stuff like that. So it's the fact of trying to keep costs as low as possible so you can use that for training and your gear and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, to start with, for me, in the amateur ranks, I was trying to fight local if I could. But then to get the more experience and trying to fight the higher level guys, I was going around the country. I was fighting on Battle Arena. I fought on Rumble on the Rock out in Jersey. I fought on Machine MMA up in Stanley in Durham. But now I've hit the pro ranks. My first fight was in Norwich, just so I can have as much support as I can. This fight's going to be in Norwich. Hopefully one more after this, and then I'll be looking at some of the bigger shows like your Leeds, your Nottingham, and your London and things like that, just so I can build my fan base up a bit higher.
Yeah. And obviously, if you have them more local to you as well, like you said, like building your fan base, obviously you'll have a fan base from where you are. People will know who you are. People all want to watch you anyway. So if it is local, then obviously you make more money off ticket sales and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for my last fight, I think I took like 60, 70 people with us. The atmosphere in there was unreal. I've never had that sort of support at a fight before. And it's looking roughly about the same, if not more, for this one. So, yeah, without the fans, I wouldn't be able to do what I do, because no fans is no fight. Yeah.
And what most people don't realise is some of the times with these smaller ones, you're saying like between 50 to 70 people might not seem a lot to some people when they watch other shows, like they watch the UFC, the Bellators and the Cage Warriors and stuff. But with these smaller shows, they only hold about 500 people in the actual venue. So for you to take 50 to 70 people, that's like a fifth of whatever the whole place holds. And however many fighters there are, that's a lot of tickets to sell.
Yeah, definitely. I think people see, like you said, the UFC, the Bellator, the Bammers, Cage Warriors on telly, and they think that is MMA. It's in massive arenas and things like that. They don't see the grassroots, which is why I firmly believe BCMMA now signing their the Cage Warriors is just great for the amateurs, especially of England, because I made my semi-pro debut on BCMMA.
Yeah.
It's just such a great show. They do so much, and especially with Jack Mason here. MMA scene, really.
Yeah.
He knows the best things for the fighters because he is a fighter himself.
Yeah, see, I done a podcast last week with one of their guys. I done one with Brad Scott. And he said to me, oh, I've got another guy that might want to do one. So I was like, all right, send him my way and stuff like that. And there's a guy from his gym called Jack Eglin. And he's fighting on that show next week. So once I'd done the podcast with him, the co-owner of the BCMMA messaged me on Facebook and asked if I'd cover the whole 8-man tournament. with all eight fighters. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, that's fine. So obviously, like, I was reading into it and stuff like that, because I only done a podcast just for my love of the sport, my love of the game of MMA, like, to do my views. And I had Brad on Facebook, and I just messaged him saying, oh, do you want to do one? He was like, yeah, that's fine. So now, to what I'm going to do next week, and I'm looking into it more, and there's so much, and there's so much support for these smaller guys. And people don't realize that these amateur shows and stuff like that, like you said, are the grassroots of MMA.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's, unfortunately, there's a lot of shows out there, but none that really give the support to the fighters. Like, they do like in-depth video of the fighters before their fights, especially if they're like some of the main fights on the undercard for the amateur guys. They'll really try and give them as much support and get their name out there as much as they can.
Yeah, see, that's what I've seen from BCMMA. And then obviously they've got different organisations, different places. Like, this is the Southeast one, I think it is, that's happening next week. And then there's a different one that I've seen and stuff like that. And a few people were like, oh, we need one of these in Scotland. We've got loads of good fighters up in Scotland and stuff like that, which is, hopefully they're going to build out. So grassroots MMA is going to be growing more and more and more.
Yeah, definitely.
And I spoke to someone last week well, and I was saying to them about the American circuit for amateurs, and their amateur circuit is what is probably the equivalent to either our semi-pro or low show pro cards are and stuff like that.
Yeah,
because
I think
their circuit is massive for the amateurs in America.
Yeah, they seem to be sort of the same as a low level, as you say, low level pro cards. There's not much difference between that and the professional rankings over there, really.
Say that again. Sorry, you just broke up.
I was just saying the amateur level over in the States doesn't seem to be much different from like a low-level pro over here. I don't actually think there's that much difference between the amateurs and the pros. Here, we use the different size gloves, but I'm pretty sure over in the States, they use the 4-ounce gloves.
Yeah, it's just the sparring ones, I think, with the covered fingers.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them, it's literally just the elbows, I believe.
Yeah, so hopefully, with all these growing and all these different organisations doing this stuff, like BCMMA, hopefully UK amateur mixed martial arts will be as big as what it is over there to what it is here.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, we've got the UK MMAF. They want to try and become a governing body for UK MMA, which I think is a really good idea, because at the minute there is no governing body, so people sort of have free rein to do whatever they want to do. At least with a governing body, you've got a bit more safety, and you sort of know what direction things are heading in.
Yeah, so like you said, with that, hopefully it'll be good, and it'll give it more of a structure, then it'll bring in some more business, so there's more money goes into it, because obviously if you fight so many fights at amateur, but want to make the step up to pro, but the money side's holding you back, it could be a problem. And obviously, not whether you've got this show or that show trying to get you and offer you more money for your tickets and stuff. It's the fact of you need that money to train as well. So you might be getting held back to turning pro because these shows aren't getting enough money.
Yeah, I firmly believe that is the right way. It is hard. And with everything going up, people really do need that support. So if things are structured in a certain way, then it will be easier. Fighters can be given support to train more, train smarter, and just given a structured way to build up from the amateur ranks and hit them that pro ranks with a good solid base behind them, ready to do as well as they can.
See, what I'm hoping is, because obviously I read it on social media about the UFC buying gyms in the UK. Hopefully, they're going to have stuff to help build the grassroots of MMA. and stuff like that. And even the pro ranks in the UK, because obviously we've got all these organisations and stuff, but it's all little individual gyms. Hopefully it doesn't take over these smaller gyms, because this is what people have built. These are obviously people's livelihoods and their businesses. So, but I hope in a way it helps both, like the amateurs and the pro ranks, develop more.
Yeah, I think it will do.
We can only wait and find out.
Fingers crossed.
Right. We'll leave the amateur stuff there. I'm going to ask you a few different questions now. Obviously, you've made the step up to pro. Most people, it's the team's decision, yep, as well as the majority of it's the team's decision as towards the fighter. If the fighter's ready, then he can say to the coach, obviously, I'm ready. And then the coach will say, well, you are ready or you're not. When did you have that discussion with your team to say, like, I think I'm ready to go up to the pro ranks?
I think it was sort of tail end of 2016, to be honest. I think I'd just won my amateur belt on Lion Fighting Championships down in Kent. There was talks, like, or maybe next year, this, that, and the other. And then when I was chatting to the coaches, and I was confident in my grappling, my wrestling, and that. But it was just the striking that I wanted to work on. So I was putting in a lot more work with that. And then when my striking coach was happy that I was showing the right improvements and things like that, then he was sort of on board as well. We started tailoring my training towards the pro stuff before making the decision. He could see that I was happy and getting on with it well. So yeah, we was all getting ready for an announcement at the end of 2016. I had the injury with my knee, so that put everything back. So then it was just a case of getting that fitness back, getting back on the mats, and just picking up where I left off. I didn't want to jump straight back into pro after having 18 months off. So for me, it was the right decision to contact Almighty Fighting Championships, because I knew they also done Almighty Fight Management. And if I was going to go pro, I wanted to be given the best chance. So that meant getting a management so they can deal with sorting all the fights out, and then I could concentrate solely on training. So I went up there, had my final amateur fight, and on the night wasn't overly impressed with what I'd done. I woke up the next morning a bit overcritical, watched it back. After a while, I was getting happier with what I'd done. I think you'll always find things to pick on and be critical of yourself. I was happy. Ray and Stephen from Almighty Fighting, they were happy, and they were more than happy to sign me under the Almighty Fight Management banner. So, yeah, they were obviously happy. They were willing to sign me as an amateur. They asked when I was ready, wanting to go pro, to which I just said, as soon as possible, let's just build on this momentum from this win. So they managed to speak to the promoter in Norwich just in time for the next card, and they managed to get me on there.
Stuff. So do you think it's essential to have, like you said, obviously you went up there after you had your surgery and stuff, and you had your amateur fight, and then you spoke to them about being your management team. Do you feel like you have to have a management team straight away, or could you build up let your head coach do it, or someone that you trust at the gym to try and organise your fights? Obviously, if your coach turns around and says, if your discussion goes well and you say, right, you're going to make the step up to pro, do you straight away have to find yourself a management, or could you do it where you let your head coach do it, or someone at the gym that you trust and that knows that sort of stuff?
Yeah, you could quite easily let your head coach or as you say, someone, let them do that. I just wanted my coaches and myself just to concentrate on the training. Let the management go out there looking for the best fights. They've obviously got more contacts than what my coach has. So they already have fighters on Cage Warriors, Bama, Bellator, things like that. Obviously, I'm not expecting to get on any of those shows quite yet, but I've got to be looking at the bigger picture. That's where I want to be getting to, and then eventually UFC. So if I can be guided on the right path and let my coaches do the coaching and not have to worry about that, obviously the management, they'll pick fights that they think are right, but they won't confirm anything until they've spoken to my coaches and myself anyway. So it's really.
So it's the best way to go to have a management team in place. So like you said, you can just focus on the training, and obviously the people in your gym, your coaches and all that can just focus solely on the training and the fights, not all the paperwork.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that was another question I was going to ask you. So is the end goal for the UFC, obviously it's the biggest organization in the world. I've seen a few things on social media over the past few weeks that people aren't happy. Obviously I've done the podcast with Brad, and at first he wasn't getting anything from the UFC, even though he'd made weight and everything like that. He got it sorted and stuff like that. But is the UFC obviously the end goal? Obviously, like you said, the Cage Warriors, the Bellator. Would you be satisfied if you got to, say, Cage Warriors and just stayed there? Or obviously you strive to get better and better and better, and you don't see an end goal with your ability. You want the best, and to be in the best, obviously, the UFC is a big stage in the world. People all around the world watch it. So is that the definite end goal, or would you be...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've left it quite late with being 30, but I have goals. I have the big goals, but I also have the short-term achievable goals. Last year, my goals were to rehab from surgery, get back to competing, and then go pro. So I managed to meet all them goals. This year, I've got all my goals written down and everything. Let's just say this year, my goals end with getting on one of the big shows. If I can meet them goals this year, I'll be very happy. Start working my way up through the big shows. If UFC, if the opportunity arises, I mean, look at Arnold Allen. He took a short fight on UFC, and now he's on UFC Liverpool coming up soon. That's massive for him. And he's from a tiny little village near Felix Day. So it just goes to show hard determination and just true grit. It pays off.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of guys on social media that... like other people who do podcasts, interviews, commentating and stuff like that on these UK shows, and they are pushing massive, massive amounts to get the guys that just stay in the UK that are on these smaller shows, so to speak, than what the UFC is. They're big in the UK, but obviously like your Cage Warriors and your Bellator, they're trying to get them on the UFC card. I mean, Twitter has just blown up this week with people trying to get Paddy Pimblett on it.
Molly McCann.
Nathaniel.
I mean, look at Pat Narimani for the last card. He stepped in 4 days' notice, and then his opponent wasn't cleared
exactly
to fight.
I mean, so these people are trying to push these people onto the UFC, the Liverpool card. You've got people like Brendan Logdane. He's trying to get on there.
Yeah.
Paddy Pimblett. All these people are trying to get there.
It'll be if you could get both of those two on there fighting each other, I think that would be fight of the night on the UFC Liverpool card, to be honest.
I'm trying my absolute best just to get them on a podcast together.
Hot property, definitely hot property.
Well, Brendan said, it's just trying to get hold of Paddy now. And I think because he knows if Brendan's mentioned in there, I don't think he's going to go there.
No, I don't think so.
As much as both of them are really, really good fighters, obviously Paddy's only, 21, 22, something like that?
Very young, yeah.
And Brendan's 26. So they want to fight each other. They really want to fight each other. And I think, like you said, I think it'd be fireworks, absolute fireworks. But I'm not saying that they're avoiding each other. I just think they want the biggest stage possible to do it on.
Yeah, you can't blame them at all, can you? But yeah, I think That fight has... it was close to happening on Cage Warriors, but Brendan didn't want to be tied into the Cage Warriors contract from what I've seen on social media. Then Brendan was trying to get it on ACB, and it's just going back and forth. But hopefully, fingers crossed, we can get that fight sorted for some time.
I think at the minute, within the next few months, I can't see it happening too soon because I think Brendan's currently a free agent because he put a tweet up the other day saying, oh, I'm available. And then he tagged ABC in it. He tagged the Cage Warriors, Bellator, the UFC. He said, I'll sign with any of you just for one fight or this and the other, as long as it's this person to prove I'm the best flyweight in the UK. So I was like, kind of making fight negotiations without actually having a contract. Doesn't really sit well. But yeah, on other subjects, I've seen on your social media that you use CBD oil.
Yep.
Did you get that?
I've seen
on your social media that you use CBD oil for recovery and stuff. Do you think it's good that the UFC have actually now taken, well, USADA, the United States Athletic Doping Association, have taken that off the banned list of substances?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, away from the medical benefits it has, I think the one thing that was holding it back is people still calling it cannabis oil. And as soon as you mention the word cannabis, people automatically think of the THC and the psychoactive properties. As soon as people start looking into it a bit more, they see that CBD doesn't have any THC, therefore no psychoactive side effects or anything like that. You only get the benefits. For me, that's been a hell of a lot less aching, a clearer mind, a lot more relaxed, better sleeping. And it also, strangely, helps with my diet as well. I take my 4 drops in the morning, along with a black coffee, a little bit of coconut oil, and it sort of stunts my hunger. Because I also do intermittent fasting as well, so it gets me through to 1 o'clock. It just really helps. 1 o'clock comes, I have my first meal, a few more drops of CBD. Before taking CBD, I'd wake up in the mornings, I'd really ache, I'd do all my stretches and everything, I'd go to work, I'd end up going to training afterwards, still aching. Now, I wake up in the morning and I'm near enough not aching at all. I was a big skeptic when I first heard about it. Took maybe 3, 4, 5 weeks for the CBD to get around the body and still staying in the body and really helping. But it's 4 or 5 weeks in, and I was like, wow, this stuff is legit.
Yeah, see, my partner used it. She's got bad knees, so she used it, and she said that it helped her sleep and stuff like that. Like you said, it helps you sleep and stuff like that. She was more relaxed, and it actually took the pain away. It took the edge off the pain. I've got some. I haven't started using it yet because I've got back pain. I've got a fractured coccyx.
Wow.
So I haven't started yet, but I've tried it a few times for a couple of days and stuff. And I could, like you said, I could feel it making me more relaxed and stuff like that. But there's no side effects to it whatsoever. And people, like you said, as soon as you mentioned cannabis, people are like, nope, don't want it. It's drugs. It's illegal. It's not legal. This, that, and the other. You can't use it. It's basically like they try to make it forbidden.
But now, I think a big thing is to do with the big pharmaceutical companies, of it being maybe not a cure for cancer, but it'll help with cancer and things like that. And they'd just lose too much money if doctors and that started prescribing CBD. So I think maybe they might sort of influence, they're trying to not let it come through, but just look at Holland and Barrett. A major high street shop has just started selling CBD oil. Maybe it's not the best quality, but it is still now on the shops and you can buy it.
Yeah, see, that's where I got mine and my partner's from. And when we went in, I asked them where it was. And the woman was like, oh, here, they're not allowed to have any posters up for it. They're not allowed to promote it or anything like that. That's why you haven't seen any adverts for it or anything like that. Because like you said, the big pharmaceutical companies are going to lose so much money, even prescription painkillers, people that pay their prescriptions, where I'm from, it's £9.20 for a prescription. So if 100 people are doing that, that's a lot of money they're missing out on.
Yeah, definitely.
So, on another subject, I won't keep you too much longer. Let you chill out on your Saturday night.
No, that's fine.
I just live near the seaside. I've been to that seaside. It's not the greatest seaside, but for me, the seaside is a peaceful place. You can just go, everything disappears. Do you have a zen place yourself? Somewhere you go where it's just you, your thoughts, you go and recuperate mentally?
To be honest, just being at home with the missus, I've got a missus and two kids, so although it's hectic, it is also my place where I can relax, I can chill out, switch off from the training, the fighting, and just relax. Like, I went to work this morning, straight down the gym afterwards, and I've spent the rest of the day at home with the missus, the kids, just chilling out, watching films, sitting there while they're spinning on with my... like that. But no, that is, for me, my way of relaxing, chilling with my family.
Good stuff. So that's where you recuperate. You leave the gym at the gym and you focus.
Yeah. Unless I'm out running and things like that. But yeah, if I can leave it at the gym, that's better for me. And home life's home life.
Good stuff. Do you see yourself staying in one weight division, or do you see yourself maybe trying to go up?
If anything, I'm going to go down. My last 3-4 fights, there's not really been a weight been done through diet. I don't sauna, I don't do anything like that. My last fight was a late replacement. He usually fights at featherweight, so he didn't have to cut anything. He came in 70 kilos, I was 70 kilos. Now I'm fighting a legit lightweight. See how I get on. But because I'm quite a small lightweight, see how I get on with this fight. But there's a good possibility I will be dropping down to 66. Again, it will just be done through diet. And I'm not a big fan of saunas, so if it will be done anyway, it would be water loading.
Yeah, see, I had a bad experience with weight cutting. And I always tell people, if you're going to try and lose weight, do it through diet. Do it over.
Definitely.
If it takes you an extra month, do it in an extra month. Crash dieting, yeah. Doing it in a sauna, or going to smash it 3 hours out in the gym on a treadmill and stuff like that. It's really, really unhealthy.
I think that my last amateur fight, where I hadn't been training and I didn't think I'd be fighting, I'd put on a fair bit of weight. At the start of that camp, I was 84 kilos. So I lost 14 kilos in 12 weeks. But that was just all through diet and hard work. No saunas, no killing myself in a sauna suit, going for stupid runs, no water loading, just a good nutritional coach and coaches that are really pushing me, making me work.
Good stuff. Yeah, it's not good standing in a sauna with a sweatsuit on and stuff like that. It's obviously, it affects your muscles as well as your brain and stuff like that as well. I don't think this is what some people realise when they do it and they see people on like the UFC and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, this fighter missed weight. And then people are like, oh, how can they miss weight? Well, they're clearly not getting the right nutrition.
No. They don't see what happens behind closed doors. A big part of it is I've been following someone on Facebook and Instagram called Mr. Sport Official. He does a lot of the high-level guys. He's done Alan Philippot, Reese McKee, Dean Garnett, people like that. He's helped with all their nutrition. He's always putting up low-calorie recipes, little tricks and tips and everything like that. He's really good at what he does. And the information he posts is invaluable. I'd urge any athlete, be it amateur or professional, to search him out on Facebook and Instagram and just talk to the guy, because what he doesn't know isn't worth knowing. He is legit, proper legit.
See, there's prime examples of people missing weight and not dieting properly. Like the main one that sticks out to me is Anthony Rumble Johnson. He was fighting at 185 and he actually got cut from the UFC because he missed weight three times. And he wasn't a top athlete at 185. No. And then when he got cut, like I read an interview and he said, and I watched all the interviews and stuff, and he said he just wasn't there. And then he had to go back and find himself. And then his coaches, after he went to another organization and tried to keep cutting away and keep cutting away, they were like, look, you really can't do this. And they said to him, look, why not go up to 205? And he went up to 205. He could eat what he wanted in proportion. He could train properly. He didn't have to diet as much. He didn't have to watch his weight so much to get to 205 because he was going up. And he went to 205 and he was just an absolute animal. So if it comes to it, people should go the weight up if they have to. But obviously, if they find it easy enough with dieting and stuff like that, and they've got enough big enough time frame to do it in. See, like you say, if you don't get a fight on short notice, you normally get between 6 and 12 weeks of a scheduled fight. So you've got 12 weeks to lose some weight. So you could take a fight at the lower weight, maybe even two weight classes, to get to that stage where you're doing it healthy enough, where you're not going to affect your head, your mind, your brain, and your body by punishing it in a sauna.
No, exactly. I mean, your body needs the fuel, needs the food to fuel your body to be able to train. So if you're doing major calorific deficits, then you're not getting that fuel, you're not getting the energy, you're not able to train. And if you can't train, then you're just not going to perform during the fight.
Yeah, so it's really... It's mind-blowing that people are professional athletes and do miss weight, in my eyes. It's obviously, if you're a professional, it's your job, especially in the fight game. Like, a couple of ounces is different to 2 or 3 pounds. So if you miss weight by 2 or 3 pounds, obviously they get docked wages from it, but you're still a professional fighter. And like I said, unless you take it on short notice. But then you've got people that do take fights on short notice. Yeah, it's at the same weight category. But most people, when they have a fight, they go and eat a massive meal. They go out and celebrate. They drink. They have a crazy meal just to refuel everything that they've had because of either dieting or crash dieting with water building and stuff like that. So they want to get that back in there. And they've not had them luxuries for 6 to 12 weeks. So they're thinking, yes, I'm going to go out and get steaming and have McDonald's, have this, have that. So
I usually give myself a week afterwards, just eat literally whatever I want. After that week, I'm back on a diet, not so much a strict diet, but I'm looking at what I'm eating. And then as soon as that the next fight is confirmed, bang, 8 to 12 week camp, that's when we get knuckled down, that's when we're back on MyFitnessPal, linked in with my Garmin watch, so I'm knowing what I'm eating, how many calories I'm burning, and everything like that. Because as you say, that is the first part of your job, making weight.
Yeah, see, for me, it'd be, if it was me that was doing it, I'd try and get there earlier than the weigh-ins. So obviously, maybe a week, 2 weeks before, depending on how much time frame you've got. So you can train at that weight. So if you're training with bigger guys, you're building that little bit extra strength and speed and stuff like that, whilst training with bigger guys, but at the weight that you're going to be fighting at. So not saying that when you get to fight your opponent, it's going to be easier, but it might be, because obviously if you're training with bigger guys that are a lot heavier than you, a lot stronger than you, because they are bigger guys, you're training at the weight that you're fighting at. So when you get in there, obviously your opponent might have the same mentality, but if from my perspective, it'd be, well, I've trained with bigger guys, so psychologically I feel I've got the advantage. Because I've been training with bigger guys, I believe I'd be stronger than him and stuff like that. So it'd be 2 weeks before the fight at the weight that you're going to fight at. So then you know you're there, and you're only watching what you eat and how you train. So if you do lose a couple of extra pounds whilst you're training, or a couple of ounces or something like that, or a kilo, you've got that time frame to put it back on. But sensibly, like you said, either with water, or protein shakes or something like that, just to put it back on in a safe period of time.
Yeah, it's what I done with my last amateur fight. I think I was like 2 weeks out from fight, and I was like 71.2 kilos. So I knew, right, coming up to my last training week, I had a big refeed on the Sunday, so lots of pasta, lots of chicken and things like that, just to give me that little bit extra energy to get through the last hard week of training. Comes to the final week where I just relax and chill out, and I think I was like 70.6. I had 0.3 of a kilo to lose by the Friday, so it's literally nothing.
Yeah, it's I think it's a main thing that all organizations need to take a good hard look at, for because they're all for now the safety of the fighters, obviously with medical suspensions after knockouts and stuff like that, and injuries. Obviously Brendan Loughdane broke his arm. He's had to wait a few weeks after being cleared before he can go back. I mean, the UFC are doing it. I think it's with Frankie Edgar. He got knocked out by Brian and Ortiz. And normally it's a 6-week suspension after a knockout, yet they've allowed him to go back into a training camp. They've jumped into some loops in a hole or some sort, and 4 weeks after, he's allowed to sign for another fight and go back to sparring.
Well, they done it with this year as well, didn't they?
With the Calvin Gastelum fight.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that these guys, if they're living, they need to make money and that, but surely safety is more important than money. I don't know. I know maybe UFC haven't been doing as well as what they have done in previous years, and they're looking for them big names all the time, but sooner or later, it's going to become unstuck and someone's going to get...
Yeah, I see. I think it's... they've set the bar too high for themselves. Obviously, with stuff like the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz fight, and then obviously the number two with that. And then now, obviously, they've gone that step up and they're trying to get super fights. I mean, obviously, before they were trying to get an Anderson Silva-John Jones fight, and they were going to have it at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. I mean, that's an 85,000 all-seater stadium. Plus another 10,000-15,000 seats on the pitch. So, but Anderson Silva walks around at between 220 and 230. So him making 205 is nothing. He done it against Stefan Bonner. So, and he still looked good against Stefan Bonner. I mean, well, he finished him. So, and Stefan Bonner is a 205er. So,
yeah,
it's one of the things. But I see they've put in regulations. Well, they're trying to bring in regulations. I hope other organisations follow suit. That they're putting a bracket on how much weight you can actually cut. So if you walk around at a certain weight, you can only go down a certain amount.
Yeah, they're on about doing how they do their USADA drug testing. They're on about doing random weight checks throughout camp and everything, and saying you can't vary between a certain percentage, which I think is a very good idea. It will stop like the Johnny Hendricks sort of style bad weight cuts, losing stupid amounts of weight, because the one time doing it, it might be all right, but when you're trying to do it 3, 4, 5 times a year, that really isn't good.
I mean,
for your body.
I think I remember Johnny Hendricks done it, and he tried to lose weight in a salts bath with a sweatsuit on, and then he stood up and passed out. He slipped and gave himself concussion because he banged his head on the bath. And if you're doing that sort of stuff, obviously weight cutting and crash dieting like that basically affects your brain. It affects your mental state and the lack of oxygen to your brain. That's why he passed out. So him banging his head could have ended up a lot worse than what it was.
Yeah, 100%. He was very lucky.
People like Anderson Silva, he's again, a prime example of it. He used to walk around at between 220 and 230 and then cut weight to 185 in a week and a half, 2 weeks to get there. And then when he used to fight everywhere else, he used to go sit in his hotel room for 3 hours on a drip to put that 220 back, go back up to 220. I mean, it's not healthy crashing that much weight in that short a period of time. Trust me, that's what I did. I lost a stone and a half in a week. And I ended up in hospital with a swollen heart. So I know it's not good. This is why I'm passionate about the weight cut. Obviously, you don't want, if you knew a fighter was going into there and he was really, really struggling. I mean, Brad Scott said this to me, like when he was meant to fight Jack, And obviously the USC doctors told him not to make weight. He was genuinely concerned. Obviously he was pissed off with him doing it. And he said, oh, Jack could have texted me and said, like, I'm not going to make weight. I've fucked up, blah, 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 blah. He said, but he was genuinely concerned with his health. Obviously, because it was such a big weight for him to cut, he said, like, if he couldn't do it, he should have just texted me and said, can we do it at this weight? He said, because I don't want, he said, I signed the contract at a catch weight anyway. He said, so I'd have done it 5 pounds extra, so he didn't have to do that. He said, but he could have got in there and not, the doctor's not known about anything like that. And obviously his head not being in the right place. He said, and one punch could have nearly killed him, or it could have killed him. He said, and that's the end of his life. He said, and that's the end of my career and end of my life, because I'll have that on my conscience that I've killed a man, basically.
He wouldn't be able to, yeah, you wouldn't be able to carry on, would you?
And it's the same for every fight. Obviously, you could, it is a brutal sport. There's no question in that. And but you do, there is a genuine mutual respect there. You obviously, you don't want to go in there and kill your opponent. I know people say, oh, I'm going to kill him. But that's not literally going to kill him.
I mean, you don't even really want to hurt them. I think myself, I'm quite a humble guy. I always want to make sure my opponent's all right and everything. So even after, say you finish a guy, submit a guy, first of all, what I do, I want to make sure my opponent's okay, he's not injured. So at the end of the day, we're all at a stage where we've still got to go to work the next day, and we've still got to.
And on that thing, like what you're saying, you're caring about your opponent and stuff. Was it? I remember Minotauro Nogueira was fighting. What's his name? The Samoan guy. I can't remember his name now. But yeah, it wasn't Minotauro Nogueira. It was Little Nog. Yeah, 205. I can't remember his name. But yeah, they're really, really good friends. But they'd obviously been matched together. And Little Nog got finished. And Mark Munoz, that's it. And straight after the fight, he actually stopped hitting him and said to the ref, look, he's out. I'm not hitting him anymore. And the ref jumped in and they were like, what? What's happened here? But because it was his friend, obviously, he's genuinely concerned. You don't even have to be friends. I mean, look at the Nate Diaz Conor McGregor fight, the second one. They kicked the living hell out of each other. But still afterwards, they were still concerned about each other.
Yeah, the respect afterwards was unreal as well.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, really, doesn't it? It's general mutual respect, obviously, because it's one talent via another talent.
I mean, the way I look at it, you don't hate people you play football against, and this is still a sport, so why should you hate someone or want to cause injury to someone you're competing against?
Exactly. So, I'm going to let you go and enjoy your Saturday night. I really appreciate the chat.
No, thank you.
There's still tickets left for your fight. I might try and get there. Obviously, it's not too far away. It's only an hour and a half.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. I've still got some tickets. They're quite possibly the last one was a sellout. But yeah, there's usually tickets floating about somewhere.
I'll try my best. Obviously, I'm going to that event in Colchester on Saturday. It'll be the MMA event. So I'll see what's happening after that.
Enjoy that.
And
See,
it makes it more exciting because obviously now I've done the podcast with you. And if I actually get to your event, I've had an input sort of thing, obviously, because I can't train MMA anymore. The reason I'm doing the podcast is that I wanted to still stay in the sport. I absolutely love the sport. But obviously, for fitness reasons, I couldn't carry on training and stuff like that. So this is my way into the sport. So like, me being involved in the BCMMA Academy, we've doing even the podcast, like there's 29 fights on the card, and I'm only speaking to 8 guys, but to me I'm still having an input, and obviously I'm still helping promote it, and it's for the love of the game, basically. Like all these guys that I've been speaking to, some of them are 18, some of them are a bit older, and they're like, "Oh right, yeah, are you coming?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm coming down," and they're like, "Oh." And then people have been saying to me, oh, are you getting paid for this? I'm like, look, no, I genuinely do this for the love of the game. I want to see the sport grow. It's grown over so many years. I mean, I started watching it from The Ultimate Fighter Series 3 with Michael Bisping. That was sort of when I took notice, obviously, British guys doing it. I was like, oh, this is a good sport. Like, obviously, I'd heard about it before, but I was only 12 at the time. So It was, and then obviously seeing British guys, you know, Ross Ponton, Michael Bisping, stuff like that. They were there, and I was like, yeah, well, this is good, this is good. So I've watched it since then. So to help grow the sport and be involved in promo with anything, helping guys get out there, helping them even with sponsors or anything like that, even just talking to them. I mean, I get starstruck most times. So talking to all these guys and even yourself, it's like, woo, a bit nervous, but...
Yeah, I mean, without people like yourself helping to promote us lower-level fighters, we'd still be stuck back at square zero. I mean, it is a hard, lonely sport. So the more we have people like you promoting us and the events, the easier it makes it for us. And it's more enjoyable for us because me doing this now, hopefully it gets out to a few people who then might take notice of me in the future, and I can give something back by putting on a good performance on the night.
Yeah, see, I will publish it on all social media that I've got. I'll tag you in the more and stuff like that, and then I'll send you the links as well. And obviously people can check it out. It's on iTunes as well.
So, awesome.
And it's on Anchor. But as I was on about sponsors there, I've got one question from one bearded guy to another. Do you get specific beard products? And where do you get them from?
I have a mate who was doing his own beard care products. He done me a custom beard brush made out of wild boar bristles. He does all the beard oil and beard wax. But one of the best things I've found for my beard is actually coconut oil, to be honest. Not only does it have great health benefits, it's also pretty good for my beard.
Because I'm trying to get a sponsor for my podcast, and I'm in talks with someone who's talking to an owner of a company called Mobros, because they're from Leicester. Nice. Yeah, they're from Dragon's Den, and one of my friends, he's got like a real redneck lumberjack beard, and he's an ambassador for the company.
So
I'm going to send him your way, and he can shout some stuff to you.
So that'd be awesome.
I'll send him your way through Twitter, and we'll hopefully get something sorted with it.
Thank you very much.
So if you want to shout out your sponsors and your Instagram or your Facebook and stuff like that, fire away.
I mean, Facebook is facebook.com/superscottbutters, or search for hashtag SuperMMAN. Same on Instagram, Scott_Butters_MMA. And Twitter, search for hashtag SuperMMAN. Big thank you to all my sponsors. Without them, I really wouldn't be able to do what I do. CBD Ultra, the Studio Martial Arts and Fitness Center in Dereham, they give me free training down there. A company called MTF Up, Man the Fuck Up, they're always helping me with sweet hoodies, t-shirts, tracksuits, things like that. The barbers of Dereham, always making me, they're probably the only people that I trust to come. I've got Exceed Your Limit, they help me with all my supplements. Wyndham Scaffolding, he's a good friend of mine, chucks a bit of work my way and always helps me out with training gear. Ultimate Fight Outlet, they're the ones that keep me geared up with all my gloves, my shorts, my rash guards, everything and anything that I may need to see me through training. Who else do I got off? I really can't think of.
Let's see, who else have I got? I've got my massage company, which is Focus for Fitness. Without them, my body would be in a state of disrepair. I go see them every week. I've got my coaches. I've got Baruch Martin from BNB Jiu-Jitsu in Norwich. If anyone's ever in the area and fancies a tough roll, head down there. But I warn you, it will not be easy. Mario Fuzetta from Team Fuzetta, my Thai boxing coach up in Great Yarmouth.
Max Bateman, Diversifit, he's my PT, and also an MMA coach in Durham. He's the one that's been helping me get my weight on point. Yeah, and also my good mate Joe Millett, JPM Plumbing, again, always helping me out with anything that I may need. Without these guys, I wouldn't be able to do half the things I do. And also Tasteless Teas. Find them on Instagram. This guy is a sick artist, and he's actually, I commissioned him to do a design for me, a Believe in the Beard t-shirt. It's going to be sick when it comes out. Hopefully should have something to release in a couple of days. But yeah, it's going to be good.
Good stuff. All right. Again, thank you very much for the chat. If I don't get there, good luck in your fight. Keep me posted on all the updates. And I'll speak to you soon. Hopefully when I'm next in Heatrum, we'll catch up and have a coffee or something.
Definitely, mate. Thank you very much for taking the time and giving me the platform to get myself out there, mate.
No way. No worries. If you ever want another chat, just let me know and we can sort this out again. Hopefully we're upgrading soon, so we might be able to do a video link one.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Right. Thank you very much. Yeah, everyone that's listening, go follow me on Twitter at Monstars10. If you want to follow me on Facebook, Scott McKinnon. Thank you very much. Cheers for the chat.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.